From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our returning guest super producer, Casey the Con Pegram.
K-H-A-N.
K-H-A-N. Yes, very important. Also, most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this stuff they don't want you to know. Today's episode is a bit of a rabbit hole for us. I mean, every episode's a bit of a rabbit hole for everyone involved, but we have a little bit of backstory here. In a previous episode of this show, we explored the strange, ongoing, and likely doomed quest to find the grave of Genghis Khan. And we also discovered that is the correct pronunciation.
Yes, Genghis Khan is now Genghis Khan.
Like Jenga, like the game.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Was that a,
it's a reference?
Comedy bang bang reference? Yeah. That's Carl Tart.
And along the way, we learned that not only is it nearly impossible for anyone to find the Khan's actual resting place, not only is it maybe possible that people know where it is and will never share that information, but we learned a lesson that, Matt, you and I learned years and years ago when we looked at lost civilizations, and that is that this species, on the whole, is just terrible at holding on to or remembering anything. We've lost the location of tons of other immensely important historical figures. And sure, sometimes that's through honest, boneheaded mistakes, moments of instability and confusion as empires rise and fall. And in some other cases, it's on purpose. It's through purposeful obfuscation. But before we explore all the famous, incredibly crucial historical figures who have disappeared from the modern day, we have to admit that there's some deceptive number play at work here. When you think about it, folks, most people's tombs are lost. Over 90% of people's tombs are lost in the big picture. But what do we mean when we say that? Here are the facts.
Well, it's a combination of quite a few different factors, but overall, there are two really important things that stick in the craw of your Laura Crofts of the world, right? First, tombs were expensive. And honestly, that's not any different today. If you want like a fancy burial or some kind of mausoleum or a plot, you know, land is scarce. Lots of people die. You know, it's quite an expense unless you just want to like go the cheap route. And even then, you got to pay for a damn urn.
Yeah.
Funerals are a racket in this. I can't recall whether we've done an episode on this yet, but funerals are very much a racket, at least in the West.
And, you know, if your family is in the funereal business, I know there's the whole notion that it is a comfort. It is a service you are providing. That's one way to look at it. But there is absolutely money to be made, and people are often kind of swindled into overpaying for things in memory of their loved one or as some kind of tribute to them when, I don't know.
It's the old Bernays thing that we talked about in episode one, guys.
Create the need.
Well, yeah, create the need, and then don't be swayed as the consumer or the person going through some kind of traumatic emotional thing. You can't be swayed by those pleas to your emotion.
So point being, this remains true today. But throughout the course of history, the vast majority of people were buried in much more modest structures. Or in some cases, the body was just burned. That was back when you could burn your own loved ones. Now you can't do that anymore.
You can't you get could. Caught.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair, man.
Jeez. That smell really gives it away.
Or there were things like sky burial, you know what I mean, where the funereal process becomes more important than the, you know, the physical resting site, right?
Isn't that kind of coming back? Isn't there such a thing as like green burials or modern sky burials?
I don't know about modern sky burials, but green burials are definitely huge. And in our home state of Georgia here in the U.S., there is a nearby Catholic monastery that's one of the only two places, I believe, in the United States that practices green burial. And that's a good observation too, Noel, because with green burial, the idea is that ultimately everything involved in the burial, from the box to the wrappings around the corpse to the corpse itself, will just become part of the soil.
Leave no trace, no gravesite left behind.
And that's how many, many people ended their lives, right? They were maybe in some cultures thrown into the sea, or in some unfortunate places, people just rotted where they fell.
That's right. And as we said a minute ago, there's also the issue of scarcity of burial sites because there are just so many people.
There are so many people, especially if we look over the long term. All right, let's do something very cheerful and dive into some of the death statistics, the statistics of morbidity or fatalities. We were able to find, in a very rough way, the number of people who have died ever, like not from 1950 on, not from 1770, whatever on, but
it's up until 2015.
It's up until 2015, but I messed with the math a little.
Oh, okay.
I got it to 2018.
Oh, awesome.
So according to the Population Research Bureau, modern Homo sapiens, meaning people who were more or less like all of us listening now are, this hot newfangled Homo sapien shtick walked the earth about 50,000 years ago. And since then, more than 108 billion members of our species have been born. That's a rough number because, again, we have virtually no demographic data for 99% of the span of human existence. 49,000 years ago, people weren't like, hey, let's get the tribe together and figure out everybody's average age, interest, and preference for, you know, type of food, type mm-hmm. of leisure.
Yeah, they weren't so much into analytics back then.
Surprisingly not.
These days, we can't get enough of them.
Correct. But we did find a pretty accurate number, right?
Yeah. That's right, Matt. If we do a little simple math, we can find some astonishing things. So let's take a fairly accurate number of people living on the planet today. That's 7.7 billion. Again, very rough because longtime listeners, if you remember an earlier episode, Matt, you actually pulled up the world population clock and we looked at how many people were born and died just in the 45 minutes that we spent doing the episode.
I can't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere around 10,000 that were added while we recorded the episode.
Yes, that's true. That's true. So welcome if you're listening. So yeah. All we have to do is a little bit of subtraction. Take that 7.7 billion away from the 108 billion who have ever been born, and we arrive at this number.
Around 100 billion, 300 million human beings that have died on this planet.
Overall, just in the course of this ugly, brutal thing called human life on Earth. And so with this in mind, we can easily see that we don't know where all 100 billion, 300 million graves are, right? And many, 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 many of those people didn't get a grave at all. You know, like you said, Noel, many were probably burned or disposed of according to the cultural values or mores of the time. And when we think about this, it means it's reasonable to assume that many people got lost in the historical shuffle. As we said, empires rise, they change names, the rulers change families, names of cities change. It's Istanbul, not Constantinople, and that's nobody's business, but it's sort of everybody's, et cetera. And not for nothing did Shelley write the poem Ozymandias, which is great.
Oh, yeah. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
Despair.
All of this sand. Look at it.
Yes. Yeah. That's a poem that I hope is familiar with a lot of people. It's quoted to great effect in the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, recently debuting on Netflix.
Oh, in the Super Bummer episode, right?
Mm-hmm, the Super Bummer vignette. Yeah. Yeah. But the guy does a great excerpt of it.
He really does. Yeah.
I say this every time we bring up Ozymandias. It was my grandfather's favorite poem, and he would recite it all the time because he was beautifully obsessed with his own mortality, and he would just constantly talk about Ozymandias.
Were you ever like, Grandpa, you're kind of freaking me out?
No, it was this, I don't know, it was a really charming thing about him. That's awesome, in a weird way.
Did he have a good voice for it?
Oh, he did.
My grandpa just drank and grunted.
Well, perhaps he was reciting something, too.
In his head.
That was happening.
He didn't share it with me.
So we know that, unfortunately, we're never going to find the resting place of most people on the planet. That's just the way things have shaken out for us so far. But what about the people who were a big deal? This is interesting what you're saying, Matt, about your grandfather having this fascinating obsession with his own mortality, because virtually every culture in our history in one way or another venerates the dead. Death is up there with birth, one of the huge inexplicable things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people personally believe that they know or have an inkling of what happens, right? And some people agree and many people don't, but no one has come up with something that everyone can get on board with, right? So it's this mystery, and we do our best to honor or remember our loved ones, or in some cases, in some gory cases, to vilify the people we despise. And each year, hundreds of millions of people make pilgrimages to one resting place or another. It could be like Jim Morrison's grave in Europe, right?
Absolutely.
It could be a resting place of Lenin, you know, or...
Yeah, and it's usually a famous or powerful person, or a famously powerful person.
Yes, or a powerfully famous person.
There you right?
go. So it seems reasonable then that since our species pays so much attention to this, it seems reasonable to assume that we can at least keep track of, if not everybody, the most important people who ever lived, right?
You'd think.
Of course.
Nah, turns out, no.
Okay.
End of show. Roll credits.
We'll tell you why this is the case after a word from our sponsors. Here's where it gets crazy. Not even counting the normal people, like you and I, and like everybody who's ever lived.
The over 100 billion normal people.
Right. We have lost tons and tons and tons of incredibly influential historical figures over the ages. We can divvy it up into a couple of rough categories. Spoiler alert, we do not have the wherewithal to go into every single famous person who has disappeared or been hidden from history, but we can touch on some interesting stories that are not Genghis Khan. We've got stories of misplaced corpses, stories of rumored burial sites. And these are old rumors, too, as we'll find. And then we also have stories of people who were purposefully buried in secret.
So let's get it started with old Alexander the Great.
Let's get it started in here.
Yep. Alexander the Third of Macedon. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Is that a different way of saying Macedonia?
It became Macedonia.
There you go.
Macedon. It was one of the world's this gentleman was one of the world's greatest military minds. We've probably heard of him just from classes way back in the day. Maybe you're in one right now listening to this. If so, shame on you. Put your phone away.
Not to be confused with our amazing cohort, Alex the Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
Alex
correct.
Williams the Great.
But in this gentleman, Alexander III's short life, he established the largest empire the ancient world had ever seen up to that point. And it lasted that way for a while. It was the Great Empire.
Yeah, it's so weird when you read about these people. His moniker is not ironic. He was Alexander the Great. It was not like a Little John name. And I think about conquerors like this every time I do something really dumb, like this guy died in his 30s, took over most of the known world at the time, and 2 weeks ago I fell asleep trying to put on a pair of pants. You know what I mean? It makes you think.
It really does.
You know what I just recently learned? You know how much I love acronyms. GOAT, greatest of all time.
Yes.
So he could have been Alex. He's the original GOAT. Alexander the GOAT. That's what I'm going to call him.
This is it. Well, here's the thing. Alexander the Great was just a regular old guy doing all this conquering with his giant armies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his numerous giant armies that roamed the planet.
Died feeling like a failure.
Yeah.
Even though he did name a city after himself.
Just goes to show. We all have imposter syndrome. All of us.
Oh.
No matter what, you know? No matter how much you achieve, how much you conquer, it's never enough unless you get right with yourself and love yourself.
And so far, everybody has died. No matter what, that's right. No matter what they do, it turns out life is a terminal condition.
Except for that one guy. You remember.
That's a different episode.
Benjamin 2,000 years ago or so? You remember.
You're talking about Space Odyssey?
That one guy. I can't remember his name. All right, so...
Oh, and Henrietta Lacks.
Ah, there you go. Immortality via cancer cells. Okay, so here's one of the big things. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly known, or at least it's debated, how he died, but it is known when he died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 323 BCE in Babylon. But you're raising an interesting point, Matt. We don't know too much about how he died. Was it malaria? Was it poisoning? Was it West Nile virus? There's a somewhat romanticized account that says he died of heartbreak.
Oh, my gosh.
That's not a thing. Come on.
People have died of heartbreak.
What?
Yeah.
They need to suck it up and, you know, start going to the gym. You know?
You've got all this advice for these ancient people.
I really do.
In this time in human civilization, just surviving was like being at the gym all the time.
That's what I'm saying, though. Like, you know, with everything that was getting thrown at you, how are you going to die of a broken heart? That just sounds like giving up to me.
That's surprisingly cold, man.
Hey, listen. I've been through the ringer this year, okay, or last year.
Yeah, okay. I see what you're doing.
I've come out the other side, though. New year, new me.
What's that quote? Be kind for everyone is facing – I'll do it again. Be kind for everyone is facing a great battle. It's one of Chuck Bryan's favorite quotes, actually.
That's a good point. It's also one of those things about being – it's like you could rephrase that to be nice to the person, everyone you meet, because they could be dealing with something that you do not know about.
Yeah, or, you know, the golden rule. Just treat them like you want to be treated.
Yep.
So what happens? So there's this idea, debatable, probably not true, that he died of good old-fashioned grief over the death of his best friend, Hephaestion?
I don't know. I heard via the internet that the H is silent, but I am no Hephaestion expert.
So what happens, though? Like, regardless of how he dies around 320 BCE. So what happens after that?
Well, I mean, his corpse, he's the guy that conquered most of the world, at least the known world, as we said. And his body is going to be venerated in some way, in probably some, you know, grandiose fashion. That's just what's going to happen no matter what. His body's going to be an artifact for what comes after him now that the leader is dead, because there's going to be a power struggle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because in this case, his body becomes a symbol. In some ways, possessing his body gives an implicit endorsement of your right to rule. You know what I mean?
Almost like, that is so strange. Treating it almost as an heir in a way, or being an heir to it because you have it.
Yeah. That's possession strange. Being 9/10 of the law and so on.
There you go.
So first, his body's mummified, and for 2 years, it lay in state in a golden sarcophagus, and eventually the people were fighting about where he should be placed, where he should be buried, make a decision, and they decide to bury him in Greece, in the first capital of the Macedonian kings.
Whoa. In a place called Ege. And again, the internet says I should pronounce it that way. It's spelled A-E-G-A-E. Mm. We're just going with it.
But the plan goes awry. Isn't that correct?
Oh, yeah. According to ancient sources, his hearse that was actually, you know, his body was traveling in, was hijacked, of all things, near Damascus, and his corpse was taken to Egypt. And it was first, it was first taken to Memphis in Egypt, not the home of the other king.
Right, way before Elvis.
Yeah.
And then from there, things start to get fuzzy. Sometime between 298 and 283 BCE, his body is taken to Alexandria, the city we mentioned earlier that he founded and named after himself. And then from there, he gets disinterred and put in at least two other places, the most famous being a mausoleum called the Soma.
The Soma, which I believe is a – isn't that an herb that kind of makes you sleepy? You know, I think there's an antipsychotic medication called Soma, or at least it's some kind of Valium-esque type drug.
It's a drug in Brave New World by Aldous Huxley.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Maybe it's not even real. I wonder if the real drug was named after the drug in Huxley, because there really is a drug called Soma.
Yeah.
I think the real drug is a muscle relaxer.
I think you're right.
I want to say I've been prescribed it before but didn't take it. It's also
like
it's also a wonderful, wonderful – I like using this word for this horror game, like a psychological horror game.
It's also a quite good Smashing Pumpkin song from before Billy Corgan lost his damn mind.
The Soma is a brand name of a real drug. It's
– Carisoprodol. That's the one.
Right, yeah.
That is the one.
So all that aside, drugs, Smashing Pumpkins, imaginary drugs, this is where, in this mausoleum, the Soma, the looting – began, as is wont to happen with graves. It's basically like a big old target in the ground saying, hey, free stuff if you want to get your hands dirty and possibly your soul.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Alexander found himself, or his body at least, inside a giant golden sarcophagus, I believe we mentioned.
It's not very inconspicuous.
Yeah, and what do you do when you have a giant thing made out of gold? You melt it down.
Of course you do.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened. But it got replaced with like a glass sarcophagus, or at least a glass container or some kind of crystalline container, which is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. I really would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, it's strange because you have to wonder, did they decide that gold being, you know, a currency – at times, they decided that was just asking for trouble to make another golden thing, and they decided, well, glass is nice, and glass and crystal are expensive, but no one will steal it to try to pay for things.
That makes a lot of sense. And also, you know, whoever is running the show now, you need a lot of gold and money to pay for all the war that you're waging.
That's right.
Because we're empire building here, people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not cheap.
It's game on. Even Cleopatra, who... don't worry, shows up later in this story, took gold from this tomb to pay for her war against Octavian.
There you go.
And then things continued to get worse, which is kind of the story of humanity.
Oh, man, no question about it. In 360 CE, there were a series of unfortunate events that included warfare, rioting, an earthquake, a tsunami. All of this threatened or possibly even destroyed the tomb. By the time St. John Chrysostom visited in 400 CE, the tomb was lost. And ever since then, no one has been able to find the resting place of one of history's greatest conquerors.
In Alexander the Great.
R.I.P.
Which is just out there somewhere. His remains exist because it takes a long time for bones in the human body to break down.
Yep.
It's there.
Somewhere. So traces of him may well be somewhere in some form, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he is now also, it's fair to call him Alexander the Lost. Searches continue for his remains or his tomb to date, but no one has found it. One thing we can say, and I don't want to sound too cynical about this, is that this makes a lot of careers. The search for these sorts of lost sites can literally change the course of human history. And so as we're speaking, if you're an archaeologist or a budding archaeologist researching this or something like this, we want to hear from you. Let us know what your particular search is, and let us know what you think your fellow listeners would be surprised to learn about it. In the meantime, let's fast forward.
Right here before we get into it, I watched a movie with my wife last night, and I couldn't tell you the name of it right now. It just showed up on one of the streaming sites, and she had wanted to see it. It's all about this woman who goes back to college with her daughter to become an archaeologist. And I had no idea that was the plot.
Is it a heartwarming rom-com?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of that. But
is it a psychological thriller?
No. I couldn't even tell you who's in it or what it was.
Was it called Bird Box?
I was pretty sleepy. It was not Bird Box. Oh, I can't believe I can't even think of it right now.
Yeah. Was it Police Academy 4?
That's what it was.
Okay.
Anyway, it just happened to have an archaeology B plot line that made me very happy.
Nice.
It's fascinating. I have a subscription to Archaeology magazine. Well, okay, look, I mine it for possible episodes in the future. I'm just going
to
be honest.
I inexplicably have a subscription to Maxim. It just started coming. I can't get it to stop.
That's funny. I think that's something that happens in the magazine industry that I'd love to look into, because I had a former girlfriend who inexplicably began receiving a subscription to Mujer magazine.
And what is that?
Mujer magazine is a lifestyle fashion interest thing for the Latina population in the U.S. and North America, I guess. And we couldn't get them to stop sending it. Like, I emailed them, I sent an actual letter, and they still kept sending Mujer.
Wow.
As far as I know, you know, my ex and I are on good terms, so I could probably write to her and ask her. She might still be getting Mujer. Like, they locked it down. There was no way out.
Yeah, it's like she's moved 3 times, still follows her wherever she goes.
We have that with Rolling Stone. Somehow my wife still gets Rolling Stone sent to our house. We have not paid for that in I don't even know how long.
We should look into this. This is actually – I think we might have just uncovered a new conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth sending us these magazines for the advertising that we are potentially looking at?
They claim circulation.
Right, yeah. Just to boost numbers.
What?
That's fine. I'm fine. I love magazines. I canceled a lot of subscriptions because we receive them here at work, and mm-hmm. I read a ton of them. But
anyway,
yeah. But anyway, that may well be a future episode. Tell us about the magazine subscriptions that you are non-consensually receiving,
please.
And we'll hatch this conspiracy with you if you need it. It's a bit unethical, but if you have a subscription that you want people to think you are non-consensually receiving, write to us and we will totally pretend that you are non-consensually receiving it.
Beautiful.
Someone's like, no, I hate Horseback Monthly. Oh, there's so many weird magazines. Yeah, gosh. Okay, yeah, we're going to do an episode on that.
Let's definitely do that, and let's also jump forward to a really cool figure in history, Mr. Thomas Paine.
Yes, let's bring the Paine, Matt. What's the gist about this guy?
Well, he's an Englishman, an England-born political philosopher. He's a writer. You certainly have heard about him. He supported revolutionary causes in both America and in Europe. He's perhaps best known for the old 1776 essay, Common Sense, along with other works such as The American Crisis, Rights of Man, and The Age of Reason, which is a really great read, actually, and I didn't expect it to be when I cracked that thing open.
Yeah, it's very readable. It's strange because I think we sometimes have a stereotype about things written in English in that period of time where they're going to be dry and every sentence is going to be 3 paragraphs long.
Yes. And you're not going to understand most of it.
Largely responsible for the philosophy behind Enlightenment thinking, and also our monument buddies, the Georgia Guidestones.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Big Paine influence on those guys.
Huge. They were huge into the Paine. That is a weird mixed accent. And again, my grandfather. The reason why I read it is because my grandfather, old Papa, brought it to my attention.
It's a good read, you know. And I know the idea. There are certain trigger words people hear that make them not want to read things. One of those is essay.
Yeah.
The other is, you know, like reason or rights. Yeah. But he was writing to communicate with the common people. You know what I mean? He wasn't trying to do fancy acts of rhetorical gymnastics or acrobatics. But eventually, despite all the great things that he did, he also, spoiler alert, died.
Oh, man. I was hoping it was going to go the other way.
He's outside of the studio right now, Matt, waiting to talk to you.
I only wish.
About his multi-level marketing scheme.
Oh, God.
It's kind of a good news, bad news.
Essential oils again. Pain. So he died on June 8th, 1809 in New York City. And today he is the only founding father that does not have an official gravesite that you can go and visit there. Isn't that crazy?
I'm so surprised. Why?
Let's talk about what happened.
Let's. So he was first buried in New Rochelle, New York, on his farm after the Quakers refused him in a town that was very, very hostile towards this man.
Yeah, because he criticized the Quakers during his lifetime for their pacifism and for some of their other political beliefs.
That's right. And in 1819, a Paine admirer named William Cobbett, himself a Democrat, a Democratic advocate rather, from England, saw the disrespect that Paine received where he was buried and decided to dig him up, took it upon himself to dig the man up.
Just grabbed a shovel.
Just grabbed a shovel.
Heart wants what the heart wants.
That's true. And take him to England where he would be treated with more respect. And he wanted to help spur the movement for democracy there. So I guess he saw this as sort of a symbolic act.
Yeah, again, using a dead body for almost a for definitely a political reason.
And did it work? Not really. There's still a monarchy in that area of the world.
There's a parliament.
Sure. Yeah, a House of Lords and a House of Commons. That should tell you what you need to know.
Well, here in the States, we basically just have two houses of lords. So at least – I don't know. Isn't that kind of the same thing? The representatives represent the people, which would be the commons, and then the senators are more like the lords.
Interesting.
The senators on paper are also supposed to represent the people.
That's fair.
Ha-ha!
Yeah. Psych.
So over the years – Paine's body was divided. It was split. Yeah. The bones were circulated across the planet. People were making relics of his remains. And now we have we don't know where the bones are. We don't know where pieces of this guy's body are. There's a Thomas Paine foundation that has some of his hair and a bit of his brain. They admit to owning that. But there were unverified rumors that some of Thomas Paine's bones were cut into, get this, guy's buttons and sold to finance the revolution.
Nice.
But thing is, kind of like in the Middle Ages when people would unscrupulously sell, you know, slivers of the cross on which Jesus Christ was crucified. Mm-hmm. There are enough slivers of that stuff to make a forest, essentially.
Or it's like those Passion of the Christ necklaces.
Oh, yeah. Or any and all holy water ever.
Well, holy water, you could just make holy water.
Well, that's right? What I'm saying.
Was it you who were having – I was having this conversation with somebody about hunting vampires. In vampire films, there's almost always a priest, right?
Yeah.
And the priest has the ability to bless water, making it holy and therefore dangerous for vampires. Why don't they just like bless a water treatment system or like a storm or something?
Just a well.
Yeah. How does it work?
Just start getting buckets.
Well, anyway, there you go, vampire producers who check out our show.
Now that the Universal Life Church of California exists, literally all of us have a massive defense against vampires because we can just get ordained in a few minutes.
Isn't that where your ordination is from?
Yeah, absolutely.
And me as well. Yeah.
Exactly.
What? Am I the only one that's not ordained?
Yes. We've talked about this.
What?
Get on this train,
all right,
buddy.
I guess I got to get on the ordained train.
Casey is ordained. Look at him. Mm-hmm. He's in three or four different sects that he's a minister for and I think a priest. Mm-hmm. A priestess and what was the other thing?
A shaman?
Bishop?
Oh, a mage. Deacon? He's a mage.
What? Yeah. Are you making this up?
Yes. No. Yes.
Yes, you are.
So back to this idea of counterfeiting relics. Very common in ancient days and surprisingly common still in the 1800s. There were more buttons that were purportedly Thomas Paine's bones that were sold then could have come from 10 bodies. You could build a jam band off the amount of buttons sold. Well, the skeletons of a jam band, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, it makes you wonder who else was in that jam band that ended up as a Thomas Paine button.
Yes, these were also the days of resurrection men, weren't they?
Yeah.
Do you think that any of those are still around and they're confirmed to be Paine buttons?
Around, yes. Confirmed, no.
Because how could you?
Well, you could. There are some forms of testing you could do to verify it because there are rumors of a leg bone hanging in a wall of a tavern in England. And then there are other places that would be Thomas Paine, right? That's a large enough sample where you could try to do some investigatory things.
You could probably at least narrow down the time frame and the region. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Right.
Yeah.
You could do some analyses that would indicate that. There are also some pieces that were claimed in Europe. It's possible that the skull has been located in Wales and then later moved to Australia. But to the point, no testing has confirmed this. And today, it seems that Payne's remains are largely scattered amidst various grizzly collections. And some unscrupulous private collectors – there are more of these people than you think, my friends – likely have pieces of Thomas Paine held in a secret collection today, sort of the way that a particular secret society here in the United States collects skulls.
That is – wow.
Creatively named the Skull and Bones, by the way. That's who we're talking about.
Yeah, that is true. Just sitting there. Do you think maybe they have it?
I don't know. But you know what? Honestly, I would not be that surprised if they had a piece of it.
It would make so much sense. Oh, yeah, that's Yale. Oh, dude, they totally have something in there. Hey, by the way, 23andMe, if you're listening, just whoever you are,
wherever you are. Yes, I saw this news.
Just go ahead and just get on there and just start just testing them bones, especially go to the Skull and Bones first.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the 23andMe news that just came out.
No,
did you hear about this?
No, what is this?
Okay, super producers, could we get a breaking news sound cue? So 23andMe has teamed up with a drug manufacturer, pharmaceutical giant named Glaxo.
Like SmithKline?
Uh-huh, GlaxoSmithKline. They're giving away the DNA test results of the 5 million-something customers of 23andMe.
What?
GlaxoSmithKline will use this data to research and create new drugs.
I'm sorry.
Called it. Called it. He said it was going to happen.
Oh, my God. I got to tell Jason, our executive producer, because he totally just did that.
Well, go ahead and preemptively thank him for possibly contributing to important medical research.
There you go.
Against his will.
Well, I mean, he
He clicked the terms of service, you know? Once you do that, it's like you don't know what's going to happen.
That's true.
They told us in their offices they wouldn't do this.
So should we take a little break before we get to rumored burial places?
Sounds good. Let's do it.
And we are back, as Matt would say, with no delay. He said it once, and I was taken by it. I don't know what it means, but I like it very much.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear this is a very dry track. There aren't a lot of effects on it.
That's right.
Definitely no delay.
No delay. Also, it means that we're getting right to it. Rumored burial places. Number one, with a bullet on the list, the Queen Nefertiti of ancient Egypt. She was a queen of Egypt, the wife of the pharaoh Akhenaten, who ruled in the mid-14th century BCE. So before Nefertiti and Akhenaten, Egypt had been a polytheistic civilization, worshiping an entire pantheon of anthropomorphic animal deities, ranging from the crocodile god Sobek, who was depicted often as a man with the head of a crocodile, a staff in one hand, and an ankh, that Egyptian symbol, the little loop with the cross through it, in the other, and with a giant golden temple acting as some sort of larger-than-life crown sitting atop his scaly head. And then you had like gods like Anubis, who is depicted, the god of the dead, who is depicted very much the same way as Sobek was, only with the head of a jackal and, alas, no golden temple headpiece.
Yeah, I love the idea of all the gods being a person with a different animal head. That is really – I actually really like that.
But here's the thing. Akhenaten and his queen thought this whole worshiping multiple animal-headed gods was for the literal birds, not to be confused with the ibis-headed god of wisdom, Thoth, which is so fun to say. Thoth, it's just I got a TH on the front end and a TH on the back end.
Yeah, man. I love that. I really do like ibis. Or what is it? Thoth? Thoth is the god. I've seen that in so many different places. Anyway, the pharaoh thought it'd be a better idea, at least, to stick with just, let's call it one god. This will be easier. We can all, you know that there's one singular force that we can worship. Let's say the sun, that giant orange thing that just shoots light at us all the time and it makes us warm and happy. That's a good thing to worship. Let's do that.
Seems legit.
It's important to note that the sun disk also known as Aten, had already held a place in ancient Egyptian religion. And this dates way back to the Old Kingdom, where it was worshipped as an aspect of the composite god Ra Amun Horus. And this is not to get too into the weeds about it, but Ra represents the daytime sun, Amun the sun of the underworld, Horus, of course, the rising sun.
I love the idea of a composite god. That is so cool to me.
Yeah. Really common in the ancient world.
Yeah, but it's something we don't really think about. Every god is kind of their own thing. Oh, although it is kind of similar to the Trinity, like the Holy Trinity, right?
Yeah. And monotheism, they didn't make that up out of whole cloth, right?
Monotheism being exactly where we're headed.
Right. So this is backstory that we promise we'll deliver. So what happens next? Because you have to know this stuff about polytheism and monotheism, right?
Yes.
Akhenaten and Nefertiti attempted with all their might to obliterate all traces of and we're going to go Game of Thrones style and call them the old gods by defacing carvings, temples, and hieroglyphics that depicted them.
And, you know, this didn't go over so well with, you know, the general public that had been worshiping these gods for so long.
That's right. And neither did it last particularly long, right, Ben?
That's right. It wasn't as unsuccessful as New Coke when that came out, but
yeah.
it was still pretty – no, it was way worse than New Coke.
Or Crystal Pepsi.
Because I believe that Akhenaten reigned for 17 years, and this whole worshiping the sun god business came in about 3 or 4 years into his reign. Mm-hmm. So – that's kind of a blip in ancient Egyptian history.
Right. And the people who came after Akhenaten did their best to erase him and Nefertiti herself from official history. And this is important. So we don't talk about this as much as we should in the modern day, but it is true that the victors write the history textbooks you read, and they are the ones who tell the stories of events in the past. And it is, at least back then, it was alarmingly easy to erase people from history. And Stalin did it during his reign. The subsequent pharaohs did it as well. And you can see why they did it. Whether or not you agree with them, it is true that this could pose a clear and present danger to their own legitimacy. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Nefertiti went right along with this whole deal because she actually disappeared from the historical record before her husband did, about 12 years into his reign. So it's possible that she might have died. There was a plague, as we know, that swept through Egypt around this time. But there are some Egyptologists who believe that she was actually elevated to co-regent and changed her name, therefore kind of slipped out of the historical record into a new role. And then the name Nefertiti disappeared and she was named something that sounded remarkably like Nefertiti. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was sort of it was almost like a permutation of the name Nefertiti. And the thing is, too, in a lot of the historical record or a lot of the depictions of she and her husband, they were very much on the same level. She already had a lot of power even before this possible elevation to literal co-regent, like vice president. Or really, I think a co-regent would be like 50-50, co-ruler, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's one possibility. But there's more. Many archaeologists believe that she could have been buried in one of the tombs of what's now called Amarna, which was a new capital city that Akhenaten built during his reign.
Whoa.
Right, yeah. These tombs were plundered after Akhenaten's death. So it is possible that Nefertiti could have been reburied in the Valley of Kings. The thing is, people will tell you that no matter how much animosity there was for her and her husband, no pharaoh would normally deny a former ruler the burial accorded to their station, even somebody that everybody hated, like Akhenaten.
And here's something that I don't think we've even mentioned this yet. She had a very important stepson. You may know him, Tutankhamun.
Tutankhamun?
Yes.
Old King Tut.
That we have discussed before on this show about the curse that existed for his tomb.
Oh, yeah. And I think inbreeding was the curse of his lifetime. Have you seen the forensic analysis? Also, I like to think of him as the originator of the phrase tut-tut.
There you go.
Which I'm a big fan.
You are. I like the single tut that you do, Ben.
Thanks, man.
You said that's very tut.
Yes, it is. When something is very tut, yeah, when something's tut.
Well, and the idea that she had such a famous and powerful son-in-law, mm-hmm. that perhaps her body was actually – you know, put in his tomb somewhere.
That's right. Not to mention the fact that he took over after his father-in-law died. And he is also the one that pretty much instantly started the process of going back, taking Egypt back to the old polytheistic ways and refurbishing all of those desecrated sites and monuments and hieroglyphs and all of that business. But yes, you're absolutely right. This theory that Nefertiti's body was possibly buried in her son-in-law's tomb, there's one part of it that is super interesting, is this idea that that tomb may have actually been meant for Nefertiti in the first place,
ooh.
But that Tutankhamun died unexpectedly quite young, the boy king, right? Because one piece of evidence behind this, it seems a little conjectury, but it's that it was a much smaller tomb than some of the other ones, and that if it was for a woman, they might have considered it diminutive, less than, so they might have made it smaller. But you could also argue that it was for a boy, and that you could say the same thing in that respect. But here's the thing. This theory was put forth by an Egyptologist named Nicholas Reeve, who's the director of the Amarna Royal Tombs Project. He commissioned some radar scans of the site of Tutankhamun's tomb, and they supposedly showed evidence of two secret chambers complete with masonry walls and, quote, metallic and organic substances. But there are other experts who aren't so sure that this was definitive of what he wanted it to be, kind of.
Yeah, and then, of course, as soon as a theory like that comes along, you've got somebody else who comes along and says, well, I'm going to do some scans and we're at least going to relook at the scans that were done, see what we have here. And according to, you know, this other group of scientists, in this case, it's Lawrence Conyers, who's at the University of Denver. He's an anthropology professor, by the way. He's looking at these scans and he's saying, quote, "It does not appear that these GPR, ground-penetrating radar, data have been processed or that any of the so-called anomalies are visible in the raw data that are provided."
This guy, by the way, I saw this in everything that cited this dude. He wrote the book on ground-penetrating radar.
There you go. It's going to make a joke about penetrating the ground via that old poet laureate of the West. But we'll go back to let's go back to the quote. He says, "My suggestion to those who are collecting it is that they release the raw data for some peer review by other GPR people before they allow the antiquities people to hold a press conference about all the riches that might be in these supposed tombs. That peer review would cut down all the speculation and critiques that have been going on around the email for the last few days, as there might be as many scientists who could reach a consensus in advance of the speculation in the press."
This was in 2016, by the way. I was not able to find any more recent updates to this. But in 2016, Egypt's Antiquities Ministry refused to follow Conyers' advice or acknowledge another series of scans that were carried out by National Geographic or with their assistance, saying they would independently test the site. Instead, Reeve and his co-author were allowed to present their findings unchallenged within the Egyptology community in Egypt. So I don't know, Ben. We were talking about this off air. Like, it seems like the ministry here is protecting their, like, what, tourism kind of boon that this could produce? I'm confused as to why they would be so secretive or not allow other perspectives in this discussion.
Could it be grant money coming in from NGOs or some other thing, perhaps?
It could be grant money. It could be a UNESCO thing. It could be any number of things. We do know that in some cases – state organizations like this are incentivized or incented, depending on which word you prefer, to preserve a certain status quo. It happens as well in Central America and Mexico, where in some cases, some countries don't want a lost site to be found because then they are responsible for restoring and maintaining it. It also could, and this is somewhat depressing, it could just be a matter of corruption. They may have just not greased the right palms yet. But they did allow him to – like, they just didn't respond, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, they definitely did. It wasn't even the father of GPR or whatever. He was just kind of weighing in on this. Mm-hmm. And I think he was even quoted at another time saying, he was considering going and conducting some tests himself, but he's glad he didn't because the whole thing seems like a real debacle and, you know, didn't want to fly halfway around the world to be part of this kind of total shit show.
Now, I know that as of 2018, professors were still fighting over a 3D image that was constructed of someone who was presented as Nefertiti, a 3,400-year-old mummy that was identified as the younger lady. But that was discovered back in 1898, and then TV producers got a hold of it. So,
oh, boy.
Yeah, so I don't trust it.
Well, point being is this is still a hotly contested issue, and I think the backstory of this whole Nefertiti Akhenaten situation is really interesting and kind of points to how history can kind of obscure the truth, you know, based on ideological disagreements.
Mm-hmm. And although you didn't hear it through the magic of editing, we just had a break off air ourselves. And we hope that you are enjoying this episode because time got a little bit ahead of us. We have more famous tombs, but we are going to have to save those for another day, the second part of what has become a two-part episode. We will rejoin you next time as we stay in Egypt and travel further throughout the ancient and not-so-ancient world. In the meantime, we have to ask, while you're waiting on part two, what benefits do you see these searches having for modern civilization? You know, some people, oddly enough, I don't know about you guys, but this surprised me, some people have argued in a very utilitarian way, we should just let the past die and focus on the future. Why spend hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars finding these long gone, long neglected tombs when there are people starving. You know what I mean? In the real world. Should we spend that money saving the people who are alive instead of finding the venerated corpses of people who have died?
Or, you know, spend it on sending us all to Mars.
There we go. There we go, in case Elon is tuning in. And secondly, do you think it's possible that someone alive today might know the location of one of these graves or some of these remains? And if so, why would they continue to keep it a secret?
Yeah. And have you ever come across bones that are purportedly from Thomas Paine? We want to know about it.
Tell us about your buttons.
Don't send it to 23andMe, I guess, but, you know, maybe send it to one of the other ones. Do you think Ancestry is clean so far?
I think it's an inevitable situation.
Well, send it somewhere.
I also don't think it's necessarily bad.
I
mean, what do you guys think?
I agree.
This is valuable stuff, and we have episodes about that. You can find them all on our website, stufftheyonwantyoutoknow.com, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. And you can send us the answers to those questions via – I mean, we're all over the social meds, right? We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Social meds, social meds.
Yes, social meds, ales, and IPAs.
Yeah, yes. As you said, conspiracy stuff on most, conspiracy stuff show on Instagram. If you want to maybe, well, there's all those ways you can get a hold of us. Check out Here's Where It Gets Crazy. That's our one of our Facebook pages. It's our, I guess, more of our member group that you have to join. The only thing you have to know to get in is our names. And it is so surprising how many people get it so wrong when trying to join that page.
I don't know about you, Matt, but I really enjoy the thing is, look, the question is, can you name the host of this show? You know?
Like, yeah.
Ben, Matt, Noel, super producer, Paul, or Casey. Thanks for coming, by the way, Casey. We also, just for a peek behind the curtain, if we think the answer is funny enough,
if we
actually laugh, we'll be like, ah, go. Come on, let them in.
Yeah, if we can tell it's an inside joke or something, they were like, okay, they know what's going on.
What are some of the weird nicknames you guys saw?
Mostly what I see is just strange pronunciations or writings of Noel's name. Just really interesting.
N-O-A-L, N-O-L-E.
N-U-U-L, I think I've
Null.
Seen.
Null. I like that one. That's a good one.
There was also K-N-O-W-L.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of my favorite things, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so you can join the conversation with us, most importantly, with your fellow listeners. And we drop by there, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if you don't want to do that stuff, give us a call. 1-833-STDWYTK. That's 1-833-stuff they don't want you to know, by the way. And there are numbers there. You just dial them. And you'll, you know, leave a message if you'd like, and you may get on the air. If you don't want to do any of that, the one thing you can do is send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.